What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to AmericaTrendsPodcast.com. I'm Larry Rifkin, John Krofcik, again along for the ride.
How you doing?
Good. That's absolutely good. Wonderful. Yeah. You and I are going to traipse down to Texas.
Yeah, we should.
You want to go down to Texas?
Yeah, everything's big in Texas.
Oh, Texas has got an identity, doesn't it? I mean, you think about it. We live in a small state that's kind of between Boston and New York, or New York and Massachusetts, and a lot of people say we're kind of flavorless.
No, we got nutmeg.
We got nutmeg. Yeah, you're right. We do. But they really spice things up down in Texas.
They sure
and
do.
They really have an identity down there. They really do. But there was a guy down there who really did not look like a Texan to me. Didn't even sound like a Texan to me. And yet he really did have a voice. You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking
who
about.
Who am I talking about?
Dr. Ron Paul.
Dr. Ron Paul, who was better known, I'm sure he's a good doctor, but he was better known for being a congressman. And even though, John, he was a backbencher, and by that I mean he just didn't have that much, you know, sway, and he didn't have a lot of committee assignments and chairmanships, but he made a lot of noise.
He sure did. He sure did.
I mean, how did he do that? I mean, what was it about his ideas that really set him apart, got him to run for president a couple of times, became an icon of young people and older people who really started to rally around him in one of those presidential campaigns where he became like a cult figure? What was it?
I think he was just the regular guy that was talking about stuff that people wanted to get done. You know, he just, I don't know. I kind of liked him. I liked his politics. You know, I didn't agree with everything he said, but, you know, he just seemed like a good guy.
Well, I remember that about you, that you yeah. liked him. And he's a Republican libertarian. And that means he's dovish on foreign policy, hawkish on debt, a civil libertarian. But again, I mean, just got a passionate group of people who started to follow him. And again, I was fascinated by a lot of the young people. I mean, they found this guy to be very alluring. And this is before Bernie Sanders, but he had something of that following.
Yeah, oh, I think he did. Well, I think, you know, I think especially young people are looking for people who aren't the candidate that are out there.
Cookie cutter.
Yes.
They want somebody who's got a unique packet of ideas.
Somebody outside that can look in and has great ideas. Exactly.
Well, maybe it was that he was against a lot of the things that a lot of the establishment seemed to be in favor of at one time. For example, you know that he had no tolerance for neocons,
right.
That he did not want us to be involved in Iraq and other places in the Middle East. He was pretty clear about that. And yet he was fighting guys like today's heroes in many ways to a lot of people, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, who are standing up and saying, I agree with this, but I don't agree with this, and I'm going to follow the Constitution. Well, he was a guy who didn't like what Lindsey Graham and John McCain wanted, which was all war all the time.
Well, I don't think anybody wants that. That's why I don't understand them. I'm confused by their politics. But I'm back to Ron Paul.
Well, to keep it alive and to keep his thoughts alive, because this is a guy who has written so much. He's got a newsletter that comes out all the time. But I don't know if you knew this, but he established the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I really did.
So he wanted to make certain that while he's out of Congress, that he's not forgotten. Now, of course, there's an heir apparent
That's
to
right.
Ron Paul.
Rand.
Rand?
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul. And how did he get to Kentucky when Dad's back in Texas?
I don't know. Why? Maybe he went to school in Kentucky.
I don't know. Well, he's a doctor, too. I think eyes. He's
okay,
got the
okay,
eyes
okay.
covered. So let's break this down. We've okay. got Ron Paul and we've got Rand Paul. And these are conservatives who are for conserving what? What are they for conserving? Well, the way I'm looking at it, they want to conserve civil liberties. They want to untangle alliances, and they want some fiscal sanity. And a lot of those things sound pretty appealing.
They sound very appealing.
Now let's look at the Paul Ryan conservatives. Civil liberties, not so much. War, no, more a matter of convenience,
right,
and more prone to use force, I think, from time to time. Fiscal sanity, well, he talks a good game when they're out of power.
Well, exactly. That's the problem.
So that's the Paul Ryan group. And then we had the Ron Paul and Rand Paul group. And then we've got the Donald Trump conservatives.
Yes.
As the mood strikes them, I think. Nationalistic.
Yeah, we're not really sure about that.
Dovish or hawkish, depending on what he thinks when he wakes up in the morning
really,
and tweets.
He hasn't really paid off for what he ran for. So the jury's out on this.
And I never hear him mentioning debt anymore. When I was driving in, I heard him talking about lowering everybody's taxes, even though we're $200 trillion in the hole. Yeah, I said $200 trillion. And about civil liberties, well, he said, don't worry too much about those. Just get those bad guys in the car.
I don't know.
So I don't know. But it looks to me like the Republicans really are fractured. John, when
well,
you think
they
about
are.
It.
They, I mean, they can't do anything. They can't get anybody to agree, so they're very fractured.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So we're going to hear from a group of folks who are involved still with Ron Paul through the Ron Paul Institute. Daniel McAdams is going to be joining us in just a moment. He heads this organization. He was a staffer for Ron Paul, has his faith and trust.
Okay.
So you're going to hear what Ron Paul is thinking these days by way of his confidant, Daniel McAdams from the Ron Paul Institute.
Joining us today on America Trends podcast is Daniel McAdams, executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And Daniel served as the Foreign Affairs, Civil Liberties, and Defense Policy Advisor to then U.S. Congressman Ron Paul. And just to remind us, I mean, Ron Paul became a cult-like figure when he ran for president. A lot of young people who just liked his honesty and clarity. In a way, like Bernie Sanders, obviously a lot of their thought processes are different. But explain what his career was all about in politics and today continuing through the Institute.
Well, I think he started out in the 70s. He was delivering a lot of babies, and he was getting irritated by the Federal Reserve and how its policies hurt average Americans. And so I think he threw up his hands in anger and decided to run for Congress. And he's told the story many times about his wife telling him, don't do that, you might win. And he says, don't worry, that's not going to happen. So it did happen, and he's gone in and out a few times of the House. And he did run for president, as you say, three times, twice as a Republican and once as a Libertarian. And it's always been the same message. You know, you can go back 20, 30 years and watch a Ron Paul video, close your eyes, and you'll think it's something from last week. I was just watching one a little bit ago of him warning about going into Syria. So it's always the same message. We need a peaceful foreign policy, get our nose out of the business of other countries, and protect our civil liberties at home, and don't let the Fed destroy our currency, hurt poor people, devalue our money, and fund a global military empire overseas.
Now, when we look at the current occupant in the White House, there was some of that in his campaign, that we were spending too much money on schools over in Iraq. We need to spend them on schools in America, that we need to think about America first, get out of this adventurism that we were involved with. But then again, someone like Ron Paul really wants to be a trading partner with others around the world, and Donald Trump has made it more of a zero-sum game. So if you were to look at those things that are consistent, this president to Ron Paul, and that which is inconsistent, I mean, are they on more of the same side on more issues or less so?
Well, I think Donald Trump understood that the U.S. population, there's something very, very upsetting to Americans. They're very ill at ease. They're very concerned with what's happening in the world. And he is a very good populist. He has his finger on the pulse of America. He ran as the peace candidate. He said among all of the Republicans, in fact, among all the candidates running, Sanders aside for the most part, he said, why can't we get along with Russia? He said the Iraq war was a mistake. It was brought on by lies. Pointing directly to the neocons who led us into the war. And that resonated with the American people. He understood what they wanted to hear. Unfortunately, the Trump that we saw in office, and it does happen quite often, you know, the peace candidate does win. And there was even a recent poll I saw that showed that Hillary Clinton was hurt because people perceived her as being the more pro-war of the two candidates. But unfortunately, when he got in office, so far, the rhetoric as a candidate has not matched the action as a president. So we're waiting to see that peace dividend pay out.
Well, in your online newsletter, it took Obama more than 2 years to kill this many civilians. It took Trump less than 6 months. Explain what's been going on, because we understood that during the Obama administration, there were many drone attacks that killed innocent civilians, but it was more antiseptic and people didn't see our own soldiers dying. What's been going on in this recent period with Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that, President Obama ramped up the drone warfare program from President, inheriting it from President Bush, but really ramping it up. And I think a lot of that was political. You know, you have some kids sitting in a room somewhere in Arizona or New Mexico, essentially playing video games. He's not on the field getting killed. There's no body bags coming back. But for all of the concerns about the Obama drone program, and there certainly are plenty in terms of targeting and all of these things. I'm sure you know all about that. But here comes President Trump, who says, you know, we're going to bomb the da-da-da out of these people. And he's given full rein to his military, and they have just ramped it up. The number of airstrikes has gone through the roof, places like Somalia, and the number of civilian casualties has increased significantly. Particularly, I mean, when you look at just coming in, I mean, I think it was his first weekend in office, wasn't it? I'm maybe remembering wrong, but the first thing he did was start launching some drones into Yemen and kill a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
So he is absolutely ramping it up. There's no oversight. There's a danger. There's a reason we have civilian control of the military. There's a very good reason, because we're not supposed to be a banana republic.
I don't know. That's a little hard to discern these days. But here's a question. I mean, when he did come in, of course, he said, I'm going to give the people on the ground, my commanders, who understand the situation better than I do sitting in the Oval Office, a lot more independence. So he was really saying that he's willing to give up some of that civilian authority for expertise. What's the trade-off there?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of that is McMaster's view. You know, I've not read his book, but I've read, you know, reviews of his book, and that was his whole big shtick in Vietnam. We would have won if we hadn't handcuffed the generals. Which is pretty much revisionist history, I think. The reason we didn't win, just like the reason we won't quote unquote win the war on terror, is that it's an absolutely flawed foreign policy. And the problem with Trump doing this with his generals is that, and Dr. Paul said this many times, Trump lacks a philosophy, a guiding philosophy. He lacks a vision for the U.S. He's good with slogans. I'm going to put America first. I'm going to do this. We're going to have great deals, great walls, everything. But he lacks a guiding philosophy. He doesn't, in his mind, he doesn't understand where, he doesn't have it worked out, where we belong in the world, what we should be doing. And when you have a bunch of military force without an idea, a framework of how to use it, you know, it's like you're a kid with a bunch of building blocks. You know, you're throwing them around. So it's actually very dangerous.
Well, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will get you there, including this notion that the big military spending boost will be of great value to our economy, will put more people back to work. I've got to say that here we are doing this episode from Connecticut, and as much as we have many chicken hawks represented us in Congress, they certainly love to throw the money around when it comes to Sikorsky and electric boat, even though they don't want them ever used. They don't want us to really be militarists. Some are very much dovish. They love this defense spending. Is this just inherent in our system that we spread all this work around all 50 states and everybody then becomes a hawk or a chicken hawk?
Well, it's sort of a cancer in a way on our society, because think of the enormous opportunity costs that are lost when you funnel so much money into manufacturing the tools of destruction. Think of all the medical research, for example, that could be done. Think of infrastructure at home. Think of the money that could be spent doing other things and employing people in more productive aspects of our society. You know, it does put people to work, but it does it by creating money out of thin air and devaluing the currency, the dollars that they get, reducing the purchasing power. As you know, the American workers' real salary hasn't gone up in something like 40 years. So it gives the illusion of wealth, but that wealth is really very concentrated among, certainly in the Washington, D.C. Beltway area, where there are several very enormously wealthy counties, but it concentrates that wealth to the detriment, really, of what could be done with that enormous capital.
What are the things that, say, someone like Ron Paul and your institute want to see us get out of as a government, and what do you want us to stay very much involved with? You talked about medical research and the like. I mean, what are the proper roles and responsibilities of government as you all see it?
Well, we focus a lot, really, almost exclusively on foreign policy and the protection of civil liberties. So it's kind of easy for us to say, get out of everything. You know, Dr. Paul recognizes the need for a national defense. But that is very different than what we have. We have a military, a global military empire. So the U.S., first of all, needs to be out of places like Korea, where not only are we not doing any good, we're actively doing harm. You know, the new South Korean president, Moon, he indicated to the North Koreans, let's sit down at the DMZ and have a discussion about how to ramp this down. The U.S. doesn't want that to happen. They want to, you know, he was elected because he wanted to bring back the sunshine policy of dialogue between the two Koreas. What if these two countries could work it out on their own, ratchet the danger way down, and we could bring home these 35,000 troops that we keep there at an enormous cost? It's a win-win situation. But the hawks don't want that. It threatens their ill-gotten gains. So we need to get out of these places. We need to get out of Europe. They're very, very wealthy. They've got a much richer social welfare network than we have. So why are we there? Bring them home. And also at home, stop listening into our phone calls. We are not the terrorists. You know, stop grabbing our privates at the airport. We are not the terrorists. You know?
But they say, well, we don't know that you're not a terrorist. You may be a grandmother, 90 years of age, but you've been co-opted by all these influences in the Middle East. You've been reading Al Jazeera. How do we get through? We're so nervous. We're so much on the defensive. We are so prone to having our sensibilities tingled by all of these conspiracy theories and wrong-headed notions. How do you begin to break some of these down?
Well, the reality is that the terrorist threat in the United States is extremely minuscule. And if people will think that you shouldn't say that, don't tempt fate or what have you, but look at the murder rate in the U.S. Look at the suicide rate. There are certainly things that are much, much more dangerous than a terrorist threat. But if the U.S. really was interested in reducing the threat of terrorism here at home, they would listen to people like Professor Robert Pape and others who demonstrate, and even some of our own generals have said, our drone programs overseas are creating more terrorists than they're killing. And most of the terrorists we do have here are people that are born here, and they're radicalized when they see our foreign policy. So we don't live in a perfect world. There always are threats. However, if we want to do our best to reduce these threats, let's think about changing our foreign policy, stop bombing people overseas, because it really does irritate them.
Gee, we can't understand why. Let me ask you, what is Ron Paul's real beef with the Federal Reserve?
Well, the Federal Reserve destroys the market in money. It's a cabal of people that none of us have elected who get together and determine how much money should be circulating in society, who are the winners and losers. If the military-industrial complex wants a war, they don't pass the hat around for the rest of us to fund it. They simply go to the Fed and have the money manufactured out of thin air.
Right. We only have bake sales for people who have cancer. We don't have them for the military. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and who does it hurt the most? You know, when a dollar in 1913 is worth 3 cents today, it hurts people that are least able to afford it. It's a very cruel tax on people. The inflation tax is very cruel to the people who can afford it the least. So the Federal Reserve is really a tool of the banksters. It's a tool of the elites. It's a tool of the elites who have foreign interests. How much money did the Fed send over to the European financial crisis? Billions of dollars. And it does it all the time. So these people are not looking out for our interests.
But how much of this is based on our monetary policy as opposed to our fiscal policy? I mean, our politicians have really doled out money that doesn't exist, that has to be printed, that devalues things and then leaves us with this crushing debt that Lawrence Kotlikoff tells us is over 200 trillion. 20 trillion is a fantasy and a good one. Yeah. If we could only be there, we're closer to 200 trillion. I mean, so is it more about monetary or fiscal policy, or how do they work together to devalue our currency and lower our standard of living over time?
It's just hard to imagine that amount of money. And the only way it can be paid off is to be monetized. You know, that's the only possibility.
Yeah.
So it's such an enormous ripoff. It's so unfair, to people who, you know, who are struggling. Look at senior citizens. Once upon a time, you could put a little bit of money away and have a little bit of interest, but that's all gone now. It's just such a terrible, terrible shame. So, you know, if you hate the warfare state, you've got to look at the Federal Reserve and how it enables it.
What about civil liberties and the militarization of our police departments? I know that Ron Paul has voiced his concerns about this. And where does he stand today on what he sees in America?
It's so dangerous. You know, there was a program that was launched by the Pentagon where they would send excess military tools to police forces. And all of a sudden you had, you know, Mayberry RFD turned into...
You don't need an MRAP in Mayberry?
Yeah, I know. It's just, I mean, I think someone said that I live in Lake Jackson. It's a nice, quiet little town in Texas. I live in the same town as Dr. Paul. They don't need a tank. You know, it's never going to happen that they need a tank down here. You know, and so it creates the mentality when you have tanks, when you have MRAPs, when you have all of these things. It creates a mentality among the police that it's a war. A war is on. And, you know, I think some of them find it exciting. I think there's a certain type of person who goes into law enforcement who enjoys that feeling of power. And I think it is just absolutely so dangerous. And we're seeing, you know, we're seeing how it happens. I think that the whole Boston bomber episode was a real wake-up call to Americans, as terrible and tragic as it was, of how an area can be militarized and taken over by militarized police, and your rights are gone. It's very chilling.
When we look at how we have distanced ourselves as civilians from the military that we employ, it almost feels as if we have now a new group of Hessians, because a very small number of people in really isolated pockets of the country, and certainly not here where we're broadcasting in the Northeast, how much have we distanced ourselves from the reality of war?
Well, you know, the poverty draft is real, I think. And I don't know if you've managed to see the great film called National Bird, but it's about these folks that young people who really had nowhere to go. They came from places like Pennsylvania, no jobs out there for them. And so they joined up and they started shooting people with drones. And now they're all messed up. They've got PTSD. They're using drugs and alcohol to calm their terrible state. So that is real. And you may have seen this study, but there was a study that came out not long ago showing that it was actually the margin of error in Trump's victory in places, the sort of Rust Belt states where there was a disproportionate amount of military service. These people voted, by and large for Donald Trump. And it had to have been the war issue that got them going. So it is reflected in people's voting behavior as well. But you're right, there is a disconnect. It's not something that people that have a lot of options go into anymore. And that does, I think, change people's attitudes. It may make them more willing to use these young men and women in places they shouldn't be.
When Ron Paul looks at Congress today and what it is or is not accomplishing, what does he think? I mean, I know you've written that August recess is going to be more limited this year, and you bemoan that because it means Congress can meddle more. But it's not getting anything done, seemingly, on intractable problems. Even if we just take infrastructure, which is crumbling in front of our eyes in so many places. So what does Ron Paul think about the effectiveness today, or lack thereof, and congressional authority having been given away in certain cases, particularly war making, to the executive? What's his take, having been in Congress for as long as he was?
It's interesting to see how the party that controls both houses of Congress, that controls the presidency, is whining and moaning about how they can't seem to get anything done. It must be unprecedented. But you know, there is so much dysfunction in Washington. Special interests control the agenda. It seems like, aside with very few exceptions, you know, I'm thinking of people like Walter Jones and Thomas Massie. There are very, very few who are willing to stick their necks out. Sadly, even the progressives, the Kuciniches of Congress are gone now for the most part. So there is, Dr. Paul always says, it's not so much that they're fighting against each other on areas of huge disagreement, but there's the appearance of them fighting when they have so much agreement on so many of the issues.
Is there anybody out there? Well, obviously his own son is in the Senate and would seem to follow on to where his dad left off. But is he really the reflection of Ron Paul's philosophical thinking about politics? Or are there others who've picked up many strands of his thought, knowing how popular in many circles they have become?
Yeah, there are many bright lights, you know, and as far as them being identical, well, no one is identical with a father or a son. It's, you know, there are differences in approaches and in ways of getting things done. But they're, you know, the answer really is not going to come through politics. And that's one of the reasons why he started the Ron Paul Institute, because really it comes from education. It comes from people understanding the issues, understanding how propaganda works, understanding what it takes to live in a truly free society, and then demanding better leadership at that point. You know, and so that's what we really focus on. There are some bright lights in the House and the Senate, but they are going to be, you know, they're going to have a boot on their neck every time until we can create the need, you know, this policy, this idea that time has come. And that's what we're trying to do.
Of course, we're talking to the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, Daniel McAdams. What do we have too little of now, peace or prosperity, or both?
They're intertwined. peaceful foreign policy will produce much more prosperity and much more widespread prosperity. Look at how our warlike foreign policy, look at the idiocy of sanctions, more sanctions on Iran, even though President Trump, less than 24 hours before he put on sanctions, he certified that they were following the P5 plus one deal. They're fine, they're following the deal, but by God, we need more sanctions on them. And meanwhile, the Europeans are laughing their heads off. European trade with Iran in 2016 is up 78%. That produces real prosperity for people. Produces jobs at home, and jobs doing things that people actually need, rather than building tanks, you know, which is like we're back in World War II or something. So really, peace and trade among nations produces prosperity. And I think it's a lot more healthy for our mentality as well.
So you think that our trade policies are becoming more restrictive and much more we win, you lose, or at least that's what the art of the deal might suggest has been wrong thus far with our deals. Do you think we're going to be going too far to begin to limit America's exchange, peaceful as it is, with other nations?
Well, they use it as a political tool, and that seems very unfair. And it certainly doesn't seem like, you know, we say we're the freest country, and and we've got all this wonderful liberty, we're so exceptional, but it seems very unfree and unfair to tell an American. And now, unfortunately, we have President Trump reversing some of the good things that Obama did, like his Cuba policy. We have Trump saying, no, you can't spend your money in Cuba. You can't go back there. Don't even think about it. You know, it's very unfair to people. If you earn your money, if you have a business, you should be able to do business. Certainly when we're not at war with another country, you should be able to do business with that other country. Travel, trade. You know, when you travel and trade, it builds peaceful relations. We're certainly less likely to go to war with China because our economies are so intertwined.
It's fair to say, I think, in closing, that when you look at Ron Paul and his basket of thinking, there's not a party that really reflects that thinking. And similarly, perhaps with Bernie Sanders, does that mean that this two-party system and its headlock on the American system is about ready to be challenged by more independent thought, where you can want America not to drown in debt, but you also don't want them out exposed around the world in these adventurous activities? I mean, is there a need now for a different packet of ideas that may not conform to where both parties have retreated to more extreme positions on different issues?
Yeah, that is a great statement. And I do think there's a need and a desire. But unfortunately, the two major parties collude to prevent any other parties from emerging.
Wait a minute. Did you say collusion? Did you just say collusion? No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the real collusion. Exactly. That's the real collusion, to keep people out. To keep minor parties out of the debate. Why wasn't Jill Stein allowed to debate? Why aren't third parties allowed? Because the two parties control who gets to debate. Why don't we look at our electoral system? Maybe we need to have some modifications where minor parties can be represented, where we have some proportional voting. That does well to create coalitions, of convenience that get things done, and break this stranglehold that the two parties have. And that is certainly something that we can hope for.
Okay, Daniel McAdams, I think we have run out of time for this episode, but we would love for you to give some, direction to people if they want to get to you, to your website, to more of Ron Paul's thinking.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for that. Our website is ronpaulinstitute.org. We have a big conference coming up in Washington, D.C. on September 9th. We would love to have people join us. It's going to be a great event. If you go to our website, or you can go to ronpaulinstitute.org/conference with all the details.
Okay, well, listen, I thank you so much for coming by today on America Trends Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
If you like this episode, please leave us a kind rating or review. I'm on my hands and knees. Please do it on iTunes, because your review is really critical for us to continue providing this podcast. And John, I know that iTunes looks at this. They want to make certain that we have some ranking, some visibility, and that we're getting some traffic, and then they give you better positioning.
Absolutely. And this way, it'll put us in the forefront so you can find us much easier on your iPhone or Android, whatever you may be using.
And they may even send you out an alert. So please, if you can, don't miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. And, John, they can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com.
And also subscribe on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
We send out a little blurb, and we can also take your emails there at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. That's another way to get us.
And we do not sell or share
no
our
spamming,
lists.
Nothing.
Well, I don't know. Does anybody want our lists? I don't know, but we don't do it.
Good question.
Even if they asked us.
Even
nobody's
if they
asked us. But.
Right.
And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. We're getting very active on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms, and John, this is really easy, @TrendsPodcast. That's it.
That's real easy.
You like that? Did you get that?
I got that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to check it out
quiz.
Now. I'm going to have to tweet it.
We want to thank you, of course, personally for subscribing. And we also would like to get some of your ideas and questions for future episodes of America Trends Podcast. And that's important, too, because we're all over the map.
our interest editorially in the future, John, has no bounds. But we want to know what it is that you'd like to hear from us, if there was a segment that you'd like to see us follow up on, or if there's something in depth that you'd like us to deal with. Please let us know that, too.
We're looking at the future. There's so much we can look at.
Yeah, and the topics that we've dealt with, I mean, we have gotten such incredible guests over the recent period, but they're only going to come to us if they know we've got an engaged and interactive audience.
Absolutely.
So it's really important that you become part of this podcast in so many different ways that we're sharing with you today.
You're absolutely right. We need your support and your help and your reviews.
And your ideas.
And ideas.
Or questions on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or using the hashtag Trends Podcast. You can also add an email address if you have a public one that you'd like us to give out.
Yeah, good. And you know what? We didn't mention Amazon.
Oh, yes. We have an Amazon store.
Yes.
And so if you go up, you don't have to buy the things that might be highlighted at that particular time. You can buy any book, and there's some benefit that comes back
just
to us.
Just put what you're looking at in the little search engine block there, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and it'll help us out.
Absolutely. And it doesn't really cost you anything more, because they have built that into their pricing structure. So we get a little taste, and you get more programming like this, and you get the item that you were looking for. So it works
Absolutely.
For all of us.
It's a win-win.
Absolutely. Win-win-win.
Win-win-win.
So for more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. And again, you can find John and I here in our studio performing as best we can for you.
That's right. And let us out.
What's that?
Let us out.
Let us out. No one is. Hey, listen, thank you so much for joining us today on America Trends. We'll see you next time.
We hope to hear from you soon.
Oh, by the way, we are posting all the time, and we're posting on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Good point.
So just be aware, if you're looking for new episodes, they're coming on Tuesdays and Thursdays. When you wake up, before you go out on your jog or your walk and you want to take us with you, we'll be there for you.
Very good.
All right. Have a great day.